Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
And welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast. I'm Kelly Ash, Senior Researcher at the Center for Rural Policy and Development. We are a private, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based in rural Minnesota, where we are dedicated to providing data-driven research on rural issues to help our policymakers make more informed decisions affecting the rural people and places of our state. And today I'm talking with Amy Baldwin, Community Development Director at Otter Tail County, and we're talking about housing. Many of you probably know housing is one of the biggest problems when it comes to attracting people to greater Minnesota and fill our workforce needs. It's been a few years now, and Otter Tail County started an initiative called the Big Build with the goal of developing 5,000 new or remodeled housing units within the county. Amy, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. Glad to be here.
So it's been a year since we last interviewed you and talking about Otter Tail County's the Big Build. So real quickly, how is it going? Have you seen some development of housing in Otter Tail County? What's that looking like?
Sure. Yeah, we certainly have seen housing growth come as a result of putting this focused effort around the initiative of the Big Build. And, you know, certainly that the challenges that everyone is experiencing around housing over the last several years with increased materials, labor shortages, supply chain issues, all of those things have made it more challenging, particularly the cost of construction. Just thinking, you know, what does it take to build a unit of housing or even rehab housing, as that is a priority of ours as well. But we have seen growth. I mean, the intent of the initiative was to put kind of a limited time frame to have a big audacious goal of seeing 5,000 housing units built or rehabbed in the county in about a five-year period. And so we are approaching towards the end of that period, but it's going well. It's going well.
What do you say is like some of the big kind of aha moments you've had since doing this initiative? Is it in the realm of, you know, letting developers know that there is this demand, or is it the public-private partnerships? Like, what's kind of been, you feel like has really greased the rails to make this work?
Yeah, I think it was making that broad-based understanding of the challenge of housing, particularly in rural, and how it is different than in maybe a metropolitan or even a larger center, regional center in greater Minnesota, that it is different. Otter Tail County, you know, has a regional center with about 14,000 people, and then it goes down quite substantially from there as far as the size of the 22 communities throughout the county. And I think getting that broad understanding across all of those communities for people to understand why isn't housing being built and why is it so important, getting those two kind of baseline pieces out there for people to really kind of bring their arms around and make it a community-driven effort, which then leads to those public-private partnerships and opportunities that may not have otherwise come forward.
So you brought up, you know, one of the big issues in rural areas regarding housing is obviously economies of scale, making it, you know, cost effective for a developer to come in. What sort of programs and supports have you put in to try and entice developers to build housing in Otter Tail County?
Sure. Yeah, there's been at the front end, we started with again, bringing the information and being a connector to existing resources. We had four areas that we work in, though, to try to advance this. So one is, you know, how do we increase that construction of units? Because we knew, looking back at the data from the 2008 housing crash, we hadn't recovered. We hadn't even gotten back up to those numbers. And so, you know, not only were we still behind in that unit production over those years, you know, we're getting further and further behind with the challenges around housing that exist today. So thinking about how do we increase that production of housing, and then advocating for those resources. So being a connector of resources that were existing, we'd been under leveraging Minnesota Housing and some of its resources and some other partnerships. So really, again, raising awareness, making the connection of where were the opportunities, where is the need, and then what's the resource to fill that gap. And so that was kind of early on what we were more focused on, is being a connector and again, bringing that education. We were fortunate that our county commissioners made a one-time funding allocation for housing investment of $2 million. And so that has flexibility. We have certainly guardrails and programs that are under that kind of guide how we're using those resources, but they have been invaluable as we've gotten deeper into projects and then having the resource to fill that gap when maybe other programs can't fully align or make a project cash flow. So we have a wide range of programs, I guess, and what that can look like from a rental, for sale, affordable, market rate. You know, we're meeting communities where the demand is and where the opportunity is, and then filling the gap.
So let's ground this a little bit. Could you walk us through like a project that you guys took on that, you know, utilized some of the state programming for Minnesota Housing, as well as why there was a need for the county to also provide a little skin in the game in terms of having some funding, and how that brought a developer to the table and filled the gap? How does that look on the ground?
Sure. So one of our communities had a subdivision that still had some lots in it, so served by infrastructure, which was important. So the sewer, water, the streets were there. What they weren't seeing in their community was the new construction of more of an entry-level product. So in that under 2,000 square foot, two bath, two bedroom, two car garage kind of product. And it was the city of Battle Lake. And so they approached us. They had actually heard about a program at Minnesota Housing at a conference the clerk there had, and said, hey, is this a fit for us? And so we also like to say our technical assistance, we have the capacity to become not necessarily experts, but certainly learn more about these programs and then again, pair them with the opportunity. And so we looked at it, you know, they don't have the capacity to apply for the program. So first step was how we supported it was bringing that capacity. And so these lots were privately owned. So it did have to also have an engagement with the private property owner. They weren't city owned. So we had kind of, you know, figuring out how would it look, how would it work to bring the resource. And so we did apply to first understood the program and that we needed to have a better understanding of the market and have some really back up to what we think was true in the community. And so we worked with Extension on doing a school district wide survey and did some work, and then also worked with our Initiative Foundation and helped with a localized housing study. Again, the community has under 1,000 people, so it's a small community, but it's home to a vibrant school district and some other redevelopment efforts. And so they really wanted to find this missing product. How do you get that entry level home under construction? So actually had a year of preparation doing that work and then applied to Minnesota Housing the following year to support, provide construction financing. So in this case, we acted as the developer. Our Housing and Redevelopment Authority acted as the developer and applied for the funding for construction financing and then that value gap. So cost of building the home, what it, and the difference to what it will appraise and sell for. So that gap, which exists in so many of our communities for that single family product. So we applied for that funding, we're successful in that. And then we worked with a private builder to build those homes for the construction side and then sold them to new homeowners in the community. So all in all, though, it took almost 3 years to do that. So it's slow, and the patience of the city and the community to understand that time of process, again, to prepare to have a quality and competitive application, and then be patient for the 6 months it takes to find out if you're successful, and then getting going in the next construction year to get those homes. We didn't know what the market was going to bring. This was the first time we acted as a developer. So that was our entree into kind of, being more directly involved in the solution, because there isn't necessarily the private market, because there's not much profit. And so the risk and reward just doesn't line up for most private developers.
So not only do you have this kind of challenge of the financial situation regarding developing home, trying to fill that gap. And so state policy, it sounds like, has been good to try and fill that gap, right? Like that's one of the main things they do. But in terms of like supporting rural small towns and the technical assistance and writing the grants and getting that all done, that's a big role that the county will play as well then.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how we talk about it with our communities, that you know, we know, you know, many of them may have one full-time staff person who's doing a lot of different things, and also to learn it once, because they're, these projects might be a one-time opportunity in that community. So it may be the only time that they're going to need to learn, like for instance, that program that we leveraged for those three single family homes in Battle Lake from Minnesota Housing. We've, you know, we learned it, we, you know, learned maybe some nuances. Now we have applied and were awarded again for another community. And so we took our learnings, made it more efficient the second time, and also we're able to show our success to Minnesota Housing to say, yeah, look, we did this once, we did it well, we want to do it again in another community. And, you know, so not having to relearn that, or, you know, a new community having to learn it on their own, we already have that knowledge. So we can leverage that in many communities.
Yeah, we see that a lot just in rural areas, is there are a lot of resources available. It's really just who's going to play the connector, who's going to learn how to go through the process and learn the systems. And the having a small town having the capacity to do that is pretty rare. And so having a county back that up, that's really great. Now, you also brought up, it kind of sounded like when you first started out with this initiative, you played like an informational role, technical assistance, and then threw some money in. And now you've kind of like, you've gone through the spectrum to now being just a outright developer in cases where that's necessary. Can you talk to me about, you know, what led to that?
Well, opportunity in some ways. The biggest development project that we're just kicking off right now that we're involved with is the, from start to finish, acting as the developer of a new single family subdivision. And again, the opportunity was that our county highway department was building a new facility and had a location in Pelican Rapids that had been built up around. So it was actually in a residential neighborhood, but now not needed anymore. So we were able to get the land. They transferred the land to us from a for a housing development. It's about 3 acres, kind of a nice size and orientation, again, in a, also in a residential neighborhood. And so we are platting it. We just are awarded the infrastructure bids for a 9-lot subdivision. And so we are moving ahead with that, which is, you know, a big step. And so we are able to pay cash for that from our resources that we've been able to build up over the few years that we've been really focused on this, and then also using a redevelopment tax increment financing district to repay us for those upfront investments that we are incurring through our development agency for demolition, clearing of the site, and then obviously infrastructure installation. And then that is the also the project we were awarded the Minnesota Housing dollars to kickstart the home construction on the site. So we're doing from, you know, we've cleared the trees, we're demoing the property, getting that infrastructure in, and then we will be jump-starting home construction. We'll be speculatively building homes in this neighborhood as well to get things off the ground. So this is a big kind of start to finish involvement for us, you know, versus how we started with privately owned lots and worked with that owner to then build those homes that were sold in Battle Lake. In this case, we're doing all of it from start to finish and own the lots, and we'll be selling those homes directly to home buyers.
Yeah, that's interesting. What's the timeline look on something like that? I mean, that's a long-term project, I assume.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about it for 2 years, so it already feels long-term in that sense. We awarded last week the infrastructure bid, so that's moving forward this summer. So we should have buildable lots by this fall, and then we'll move forward, you know, with our the timing of the home construction, you know, whether we break ground this fall, we're just making those decisions now. And part of it is contractor availability and those sort of things. Does it make more sense to wait till just do a spring construction? Since there's some uncertainty around the infrastructure timeline and when that will actually be done. So we're figuring that out. But, you know, again, long-term, how long will it take for the rest of the lots? You know, we're only building on, you know, two or three of those 9 lots, and then we'll be listing the others for sale. Hopefully there's market to drive it, but there's still that imbalance of what it costs to build and what a home will appraise for or sell for in a community. And that's the challenge. So, you know, we're talking to private builders and what that might look like, and we're hopeful that there'll be interest. If not, we'll continue to work, you know, potentially through that Minnesota Housing Program to help us keep those homes continuing to get under construction.
Have you found that connecting developers to the Minnesota Housing Programs, getting them informed about those programs, has really gotten them more excited about the ideas and opportunities to continue to build housing in particularly smaller towns, right? We're not talking Fergus, we're talking, you know, communities of 1,000 people or less.
Right. Yeah, we did also in the last year's round of Minnesota housing funding have a private developer who learned about the program, that value gap, again, that difference between construction and appraisal and sale price, that he did apply independently as a private developer, which I don't think was known well, that developers can direct apply to some programs with Minnesota Housing that aren't necessarily in the, you know, deep affordability realm or, you know, some of the multifamily projects, that there are for sale products. So he was awarded value gap dollars. He didn't pursue the construction financing like we have, but is able to have that value gap for a number of homes in a subdivision that they're working on. And that's in a town of less than 500. So, you know, we'll see. It's again, I think, right, raising that awareness of what are the programs that we don't have to be involved with. You know, he directly applied on his own, did that work, was awarded. We're here to be supportive. And as they work through it, we'll be a resource, you know, from a reporting or, you know, how do they, you know, qualify a buyer, those sort of processes. We're still a resource, but they're doing it on their own, which is great. I mean, that's what we want, to build up that capacity outside of us, you know, so that more can happen, because we are limited, you know, by our staff and how much we can do and get done.
Right. And, you know, public dollars, you're only going to put yourself at so much risk before it has to be privately done. Yeah, very understandable. What's on the horizon for you then? Do you feel like just this will just kind of continue this broad spectrum of, you know, being technical support all the way to developer, a wide range of projects moving over the next 5, 10 years, or what's that look like?
Yeah, I think so. So over the last couple of years, we've also been working really intentionally to bring our housing efforts into one team. And so we operate, you know, as a department at the county, community development and housing, but within that is all of our housing and redevelopment authority functions. So our housing vouchers, the federal programs, we own and operate right now 13 housing units, and looking to grow that side of it, what we're owning and operating as our HRA. That's an area of growth that we're working on. We're about to also break ground on an affordable senior housing, a small project, again, in a small community that is 6 units, 2 triplexes is the model there. So right-sized for that community, but will allow people to stay in that community and open up the homes that they're in for new families to come into the community. So another strong community partnership. The city owns the land in that case that we're working with, and we're just hoping to have spring construction here. We've opened bids, things are on budget, and just have a few more things to button up before we start construction on those. And that'll expand what we're owning and operating. And again, there, you know, we can't do the scale of what some projects might look like to have the efficiency that might attract a private developer to do them, you know, to get the volume of units and for, like, in the affordable senior realm. You know, we think this model of smaller projects that we're able to take on and manage and operate is something that can grow amongst a lot of different communities, and a lot of communities have interest. We're just getting our feet wet with this one. Again, that how will that impact our operations when we're managing, maintaining, leasing, you know, what kind of get our feet under us. And then certainly the funding stream of doing additional units will be important to kind of develop a flow for that.
So the work you guys are doing is really sophisticated and quite in depth. And across rural Minnesota. We've seen counties, some counties getting involved and other counties not quite getting involved in this. What do you feel like are some of the, you know, what is the reasoning why we don't see more rural counties kind of taking this on? Because there's definitely housing demand across most of rural Minnesota. Do you sense it's leadership or county commissioners' appetite to want to take on some of this stuff? Or what, you know, what's, yeah, what are some of those barriers?
Yeah, I think it absolutely. I mean, this work, the conversation started, you know, well before I came into my role here at the county. I've been here just over 5 years. And prior to that, for several years, our commissioners really identified a couple of areas that they realized needed to be given more attention, right? If our county was going to thrive as a whole, if our employers were going to be successful and continue to, at minimum, maintain their workforce that they have, there is there needed to be a deeper engagement from the county in this work. And so there was policymakers having that discussion, recognizing the challenges, looking ahead to the demographics, knowing, you know, Otter Tail County is on that leading edge of aging. And, you know, we're not at the front leader on that, which is okay. But we know as people are leaving the workforce, there aren't enough people coming up. You know, there's smaller family sizes. It's not that we're not growing as a population, but it's not growing enough to meet that workforce demand. So that was a big piece. And I think as they dug into it and understood that, you know, and it isn't just about pure population. We can't just be looking at population and think, well, if we're maintaining our population, why do we need more housing units? And so digging deeper into that, well, our household sizes are declining. And so if you're not adding housing units and adding households, you're going to ultimately end up declining in population. You can't maintain and stay where you're at. And so they, in a lot of different realms that we touch at the county, we make data-informed decisions. And so we're always looking at that data, that's the baseline. We're not just speculating. We're not just thinking this is what we're hearing on the street. Like, this is real. This is what the numbers are saying. This is what the reality is of what we're faced with. And knowing that these are slow growth things, you know, if we're going to start building housing, you know, one unit at a time, that we're going to have to be in this for the long game. And so that was the investment that they were willing to make and really looked at how should that investment look? What should that capacity look like? And, you know, ended up with this model that we're in today. So that's where they were coming from.
Have other counties approached you on getting a presentation or learning more about how you're doing this?
Yes, I have talked to a lot of different counties. And I think it's, you know, if it doesn't start at the top, it's interesting if, depending on who reaches out, is it a staff person? Is it an employer, a major employer? I've had that, you know, like, you know, they're asking, how do we get our county engaged? You know, we want to be part of the solution, but we can't do it alone from the private sector side. Or is it a commissioner reaching out and, you know, and then, you know, we pull in usually, you know, another commissioner to be in that conversation so that they can have that peer-to-peer dialogue and the commissioner can really say, we were pushing this from a policy perspective and realized we needed it, you know, to do that. And then looking to the future. And so we have a long-range strategic plan as well that guides, you know, out to 2040, you know, where are we trying to get? And we do talk about it a lot. A lot of our work, like, you know, in support of that long-range strategic plan is why we're proposing X or Y, or, you know, what, you know, basing our recommendation on that vision, but then also supporting it with, you know, the need and, you know, the today opportunity.
What's one of the biggest takeaways you tell counties to either that you've had to learn or have had the most benefit for you?
Well, I think starting at the base, you know, don't start with a big project. You know, that's, you know, it was that first couple of years that was really around education and getting people to have the conversation and understand the challenge around housing and that it isn't what it used to be, right? Just like a lot of things, but that you need to have that baseline kind of shared understanding about the challenge of housing, the cost, the, you know, what is that demand? What are your demographics? And understanding that and have the, you know, the right stakeholders be in that conversation. So the employers, the school districts, they absolutely care about younger, you know, demographics and what that looks like and what's that going to mean to their school district. And certainly the communities, you know, what, as we have aging infrastructure, how are we leveraging existing infrastructure to increase the tax base? So we have the financial resources to support that existing infrastructure. And so thinking about who that stakeholder is in having that conversation, what matters to them? You know, if it's about workforce, if it's about young people in the school district, if it's about, you know, tax base to a community, you know, what does that look like? And kind of get them in on that. You know, there's a lot of reasons we want to build housing and expand housing. And so getting them to hone in on what's most important to them.
Yeah. Like a lot of things, I feel today, there's just a lot of change happening, obviously demographically, with the aging population. And just a lot of things are, it's kind of like a perfect storm of demographic shifts, retirements, pandemic probably didn't help. There's some migration patterns that have changed. And it's interesting that a lot of people, you know, it's maybe understandable that a lot of people don't fully understand what's going on and continue to hold on to maybe older narratives surrounding small towns and rural areas. You know, we're a population of 700. How could we need more housing? You know, all we'd ever talked about in the last 40 years is population decline. How is this possible? Right. Is that part of it too? Is like even, I mean, as a developer, it's pretty easy to choose a bigger city. So you guys are up in Northwest. I could see a lot of developers that would probably go to Moorhead or Fargo or someplace where, you know, there's actual demand for housing, but for our small towns and more rural areas, it isn't as well known. So was that a big kind of crossing point that you had to deal with in your area? It's just like, no, there is demand here. Like, and get that through to people.
Yeah. I'd say we're still struggling with that to a degree, that the bulk of our development is happening with local developers, people who, so that's another piece that we talk about and work on, is how do we support people going from, you know, being a general contractor to, you know, and moving up that continuum, or being an investor in housing. And so that challenge of, attracting someone from a larger market to come in and develop, they're going to look for very different returns than what a local investment group or developer might look at. They can kind of take some of that, the other returns as far as having more households in the community, more workforce, more bodies in the school district. They can, take that turnaround for not just be cash, right? It's not just that return on investment in a dollars and cents standpoint. So that still is, but not to say we haven't had, I mean, there just was an opening of a new project in Perham that was a Fargo developer who came in, but did get local investment. And so that's part of their model and how they look at, but I think Perham was the smallest community that they've ever built in. And so a redevelopment in downtown Perham and really just shifting what that community looks like, bringing housing into their downtown, which is great, a housing product that didn't exist in their community, a new construction in their downtown. So not to say we haven't, but it also did include that local investment, local folks to step in and be part of the financial stack in that project.
Well, that's great to hear. Fargo developer coming into Perm. Yeah. Perm is it's full of all kinds of interesting housing stories there. They've been kind of leading the charge for quite a while now. So that's great.
Yeah.
Amy, is there anything else that you feel that people should know about and what's going on in Otter Tail County and some of the work that's been done?
Sure. I think what we really like to talk about is that we're also not just doing this in a silo. You know, I mentioned already, we're part of, you know, community development and housing. We are active in the youth workforce area, connecting our young students. We also have 14 school districts in Otter Tail County. So we are big in a lot of senses. And so we work to incorporate opportunities for career exploration for our youth, and that's side by side with our housing folks and our resident recruitment team. You know, we've kind of almost, it's been probably 7 or 8 years that we've been active in putting Ottertail County on the map for people to come in their prime working years is our target audience and in that marketing and messaging. And, but this is all offshoots of making sure, you know, when we get someone to think about coming to Ottertail County, that they can find the housing that they're looking for, that we also do work in the childcare area, making sure they can access childcare, high speed internet, you know, all those things are part of this strategy, right? So we have a housing strategy, but it is part of this bigger cross-department, cross-agency strategy that we have to hopefully be more effective and know what each other are doing, leverage what each other are doing in making a difference for the county as a whole.
Yeah, and the underlying story being, you know, facing the reality of what your workforce is right now and what it's projected to be and how to essentially meet the demand that you know is going to be there in terms of workforce needs. I mean, that's key, it seems like, for a lot of counties to face that reality. I've talked to county commissioners that still don't fully understand that we have more jobs than people right now. Like, and that's just a very different mindset. And like we talk about all the time at Center for Rural Policy and Development is, you know, this is a whole new era. It's a whole new reality. And it takes a different tool set than maybe we're used to. So kudos to Ottertail County and to your commissioners, honestly, for taking the lead on this. And it's maybe a little too rare yet.
Well, that's okay. We're happy to, you know, always happy to have the conversation too. I mean, you asked if people outreach, and absolutely they do. And we're always happy to have that conversation. You know, we've spoke at other regional events and you know, what does that look like? And it's going to look different for everybody in what that solution is, but hopefully they're at least having the conversation about what could a solution look like. Right. And that's what we hope we can share, because we do believe, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats, and that isn't, you know, we're not just in it for Ottertail County, because if everyone around us is not successful, we know we're not doing what we should be doing. So.
Great, Amy. Thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it. And we'll probably connect with you again in a year or two to check in and see how it's going. So you're our role model.
Oh, sounds good. Thanks for the time today, Kelly.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.